Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
We are joined, as always, by our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. You are you. You are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. As you can tell, I did that thing, so Ben
is not here
today.
You did a fine job. You did a fine job, Matt.
After three tries, every
no,
time.
No peeks behind the curtain, no.
Well, yes. Because, again, Ben is the master, and he is not with us today, but he will be returning very soon to do that whole thing correctly again. So today, everyone, we are diving deep into our voice mailbox because we've gone through, I don't even know, there is a folder that I'm looking at right now that just has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of messages from you. And we only get to cover a few of them, maybe one a week, maybe if you know three a week maximum. So today we are going to go through as many as we possibly can and respond as long or as short as necessary, I guess. We're just going to respond to these in real time, basically.
Indeed. Let's see. So I'm going to be completely candid. I am coming into this cold as the sort of the stand-in for you. Yes, you, the listener, the conspiracy realist. And I've got an amazing list that Matt has put together in our handy-dandy episode document. Matt, what do you say? Do you want to pick one to start? And then we'll just kind of see what tickles our fancy as we go forward.
Absolutely. Let's get started with a message from Jackie.
Hi, my name is Jackie from Madison, Wisconsin. Love your show. I was just listening to the latest Lister Mail episode, and you were talking about doppelgangers. I just wanted to let you know about a Norwegian concept called Valdiger. It's spelled V as in Victor, A-R, D as in dog, O-G-E-R. It's kind of like a spirit predecessor, like you can sense someone's coming, like you hear a car in the driveway, no one's there, but then 10 minutes later that person arrives in a car in the driveway. It's not spooky, it's something my relatives are Norwegian. It's just something you just predict, you know somebody's coming, you're ready to welcome them. It's not a scary thing, but yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. I don't know if you've heard about it, but thanks for the show. And you can put this on the radio if you want. Thanks so much. Have a good one. Bye.
That is so cool. It's like the opposite of deja vu or something. I mean, it's a premonition, really, is what it is.
That's exactly what it is. Oftentimes, it is described as a sound or a sight that precedes someone's arrival. And first of all, thank you, Jackie, for letting us know about that. Really interesting concept. Not one that I think I've experienced, maybe. You know, if you imagine if you've got maybe a relative or a friend who's come from a long way and is going to arrive, there's a lot of anticipation, internal anticipation that's going on for that moment, right? Depending on how much you like that person who's coming to see you. Or even if it's even if you're nervous about someone showing up because of, you know, whatever previous interaction you've had, I imagine that the mind can play many tricks on each of us. In those moments, you hear something, you know, down by a driveway, or you hear something, you know, by the door. But this specific thing, it looks like Vardager, V-A-R-D-O-G-E-R. It is more substantive than that, like, trick of the mind thing. So I have you ever experienced anything like this, Noel?
Well, it's almost like I got a bad feeling about this. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, if it's emotionally charged, maybe the anticipation of something, or if there's just sort of something in the air, like, yeah, sure. I mean, or let's say, you a song is in your mind and then you hear it on the radio. Like, that could be kind of like maybe a sort of a rudimentary comparison. I've seen it described as a premonitionary deja vu. Mm-hmm. So it has that thing. The deja vu is sort of like, I feel like I've been here before. This is like ringing a bell in my mind. It's also associated with the Norwegian concept of the hug, which is a pre-Christian Norse view of the world that is basically dates back to, in Norse mythology, Odin's raven, what's his name? Our colleague, anchorman Ron Burgundy would say, one of them, in fact, there were several, was named Hugin, which is the same word in Old Norse for hug. The other one, Munin, represents the word remembrance. So the idea of hug is a current Norwegian word that refers to the mind or thoughts, or the idea to remember. So this is almost like reverse remembering in a weird way. So they're kind of like combined, these concepts. Mm.
It reminds me a bit of astral projection, almost like the spirit or whatever that thing is that maybe resides inside of us could go forward before our physical body reaches that state, right? Or that position in time and space. Because you'll see it described as like a scent enters the room, right? Just imagine you're sitting wherever you are in your space, and all of a sudden a very familiar smell of maybe your partner or a friend that you know that scent, it enters the room and you can smell that scent clearly a full 2 minutes before somebody gets to your house. That to me is fascinating. But I know our minds are very powerful, and you know, if I wonder if our brain could somehow trigger neurons just out of anticipation. Like your sense memories. I wonder if they could be triggered just out of anticipation of another person arriving.
Hmm. I'm going to screw this pronunciation up horribly, but I found this amazing website, NorwegianFolktales.blogspot.com. I guess it's a, well, I don't know, it's a little website. It's a blog, but it's got a lot of collected knowledge from publications, like from the early 1900s about Norwegian folktales. And a third concept wrapped up in this is the idea of something called a filgage. It's got a J after the G, and that's the part that's screwing me up. That's F-Y-L-G-J-E. So I'm thinking maybe the second J is silent, so maybe it's just filgy. Filja, perhaps. Let us know. But this is a spirit companion that follows individuals around and can manifest itself on behalf of its host. So it's sort of like tied to an individual. And the filja can actually manifest the Vardager in terms of like giving its earthly host a warning of something that will happen. And in a similar way that in, you know, time travel mythology or lore, when you meet your past or future self, it screws up the timeline and like opens up like a wormhole, and then everything gets screwed up and people start disappearing from photos, family photos. In this case, if you meet this spirit companion, you will in fact die.
Whoa. Okay. Well, don't do that.
Nope, but there are a couple of stories on here. If you guys want to check it out, go to NorwegianFolktales.blogspot.com and just search for the words that we've been describing. V-A-R-D-G-E-R and F-Y-L-G-J-E. And there are a few stories that are kind of like almost like dark, grim fairy tales surrounding the Filja and the Vardager. So really cool stuff.
Amazing. Thank you, Jackie. This one has definitely got us thinking and want to explore some of that further. All right. And with that, we're going to jump to our next message, which comes from Matt. Oh, another Matt. Maybe it's one we've heard from before. Maybe not. There are millions of us. Here we go.
Hi, this is Matt. I am calling to tell my experience that I just had 2 nights ago. I was falling asleep, getting my daughter to sleep, and I had podcasts queued, and the first one was The Screaming Girls of Malaysia, and the second one was about Jin. These are both, you know, episodes of stuff they don't want you to know. And I was listening to those, woke up multiple times to help my daughters during the night, and all of a sudden, I had in this dream, I saw someone walk into the room, just a dark figure. And I watched them walk into the room, and they just sat on my chest. And I was trying to scream, trying to move, trying to do anything I possibly could to get out of the situation, but I couldn't move. I realized that I was going through sleep paralysis in that moment, but it was absolutely terrifying. I felt the weight of this presence on my chest. I was trying to move my fingers. I was trying to blink just to the smallest things. And the thing that almost scared me the most is I could smell its breath. It's like this rancid, awful breath. And it was completely horrifying. And I thought that I woke up from the sleep paralysis. And what my recollection was, as I looked at my phone and I'm trying to just think of happy things, I'm pulling up family pictures, and I go back to sleep, and the same exact thing happens again. And I'm just trying to scream. I feel this presence. I watch it walk from the room to sitting on my chest, absolutely terrifying. And I woke up that time. My daughter was screaming, so I think that's what triggered the sleep paralysis. And as I got up, I went to check my phone because I specifically remembered opening up my pictures. And what do you know? I hadn't opened up my pictures. So it was almost a dream inside of a dream. It was a wild experience. And I didn't know if maybe the episode that I had been listening to about Jin that triggered it. I don't know, but it's very scary. I would love to hear your opinion and thoughts on an episode regarding the story of the Utah woman. His headstone is inscribed "Victim of the Beast 666. Thanks. Bye bye.
Okay.
So those two things are not related, right?
No.
Okay. Go.
That's wow. An extra suggestion that Matt tacked on at the end that we're going to hold until after we discuss what he just told us.
No joke, man. That is one of the most visceral descriptions of a sleep paralysis event that I think I've ever heard personally.
Oh, I would agree. Especially, it just told very saliently.
Agree. The breath part really did it for me.
Yes. Being able to recollect that this thing, this shadow that appears to enter the room and sit on your chest, and you can smell its breath. The most horrifying thing, I think, for me, I think we've probably all experienced this, is waking up from a nightmare and than going back to sleep and somehow your brain just takes you right back to that same place. That's awful. I've gone through that many a time, and it's just the worst. But I've never experienced it with sleep paralysis, where you know you're having sleep paralysis, or at least you're aware of it upon waking or believing that you're awake, than going back to sleep and having it happen again. That's awful. We've discussed in our previous episodes on sleep paralysis, maybe why it happens, how it happens. And I like that Matt is giving us a possibility here that what was entering his mind through his ear holes right before bed may have influenced or in some way triggered this event.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I've certainly had things from the waking world weave their way into my dreams, whether it's something in a podcast, a TV show or something like that, that I have, you know, as I'm falling asleep. I don't really have nightmares like this so much. Or if I do, they're just kind of weird and interesting. But I don't know that I've ever lately in my adult life have woken up like in a panic or like felt, you know, like terrified. So I really feel for these folks that are dealing with this stuff that feels so real and maybe is, you know, what do you think? Where do you stand on this stuff? I mean, it's so interesting how like when people that take DMT trips, they describe, you know, almost identical experiences where they see some beckoning force, you know, like referred to often by like Terrence McKenna as machine elves, you know, sort of like showing them the way. And telling them everything's going to be okay, and that they are learning from these, you know, these deities or these beings. Similarly, with sleep paralysis, it's always the same. It's always sitting on the chest. It's always hovering over the bed. These dark figures. Like, where do you think that comes from?
Just demons, mostly. You know.
Okay. No. The simplest explanation is usually the best one. Yeah, just demons.
Well, we know there are varied experiences with sleep paralysis, and we know there are specific forms, right? Like shadow forms, essentially, that are described by numerous people. And the sitting on the chest thing has gone, I mean, that goes back centuries and centuries and centuries, where people have described, you know, the cat sitting on the chest stealing the breath, right? Yes. We talked about all this stuff. I encourage you to go back and listen to some of those episodes. The lore behind that shared experience is lore, but it is a really fascinating exploration of the way people fought at certain like milestones throughout history. And in this case, right now, in the present time, 2021, as we're recording this, a scientific explanation is what is, I think, primarily used, right? Like, this is just something your mind is doing. But, man, I think we need to continue to explore it further. That's odd. It's an odd experience, especially having that inception level that Matt describes there, where, right, you know, you're not sure if you're awake, you're not sure if it's a dream or not. You know, this gets into the bigger conversation about consciousness and the explorations of that that are still happening right now philosophically and scientifically. So I just want to explore it more. I appreciate you sharing that, Matt. Really quickly before we end this section, because we need to take a break, Noel. The thing that Matt mentioned at the very end there, the gravestone in Utah that has some weird inscription on it. You can go to atlasobscura.com right now, and you can find Victim of the Beast gravestone in Salt Lake City, Utah. And there's a gravestone for a person named Lily E. Gray that was born June 6th, 1881, and passed on November 14th, 1958. And it does say, in fact, Victim of the Beast 666.
Mm-hmm. And that's from the book of Revelations, right? The whole idea of the number of the beast and 666 and all of that really juicy stuff from the Bible is mostly in the book of Revelations.
Yeah. And you can find this place. It is real. It's in Mount Calvary Catholic Cemetery. And you can actually go walk to this gravestone and take a look at it. Not much is known about it. But as Matt says, it would be interesting to learn more. What does that mean? I doubt it's a joke. I wonder what happened to this person. If you want us to do a whole episode on that, let us know. I'm certainly intrigued.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of information on the Atlas Obscura article. It's just kind of like an urban, like a roadside. That's sort of what Atlas Obscura originally was known for, if I'm not mistaken, like kind of weird roadside oddities. Mm-hmm. And this is certainly that. Yeah, very weird. Yeah, it's exactly the page on Atlas Obscura is identified as a stub. Atlas Obscura requests help in improving and expanding the Victim of the Beast gravestone with additional information and or photos. So maybe this is a mystery worth looking into.
Oh, you know what? I may have gotten this wrong. It looks like it might be in Salt Lake City Cemetery. I can't tell. There are two cemeteries that are kind of right against each other in that area of Salt Lake. So anyway, we're gonna learn more. And if we can, because I do think this will require some digging. But thank you, Matt. For now, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more messages from you.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way. Knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old Richmond because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think Abuelita knows best? Wilmer Valderrama here, executive producer of the podcast De My Abuelita First. And we definitely do. Join us while our host, Vico Ortiz, and our abuelita, Liliana Montenegro, play matchmaker for you loving hopefuls out there. Vico?
Yes, yes, Wilmer. We are ready for another wild ride. Listen every Thursday as abuelita Liliana and I meet three single cuties who will vie for a date with one lucky dater. Except, to get their heart, they have to win over abuelita first.
How PG is this?
Not at all. Totally are. Abuelita's here, so bring it.
Through speed dating rounds, hilarious games, and AI, Abuelita's intuition, one contestant might be lucky enough to become the perfect match. Let's see if Chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps.
Listen to De My Abuelita First as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we are back, and we're going to jump immediately to a message from Johnny Logic.
It's a great name. I wonder if he's a DJ.
Ooh.
Hi, guys. You can call me Johnny Logic. In the mid-1980s, I attended a electronics technician school in Rochester, Minnesota. And the CIA was there recruiting in 1984 through 1986, at least once a year, they would show up looking for technicians to join the company. I never really talked to the guy because I figured I would be immediately disqualified for a variety of reasons, but it wasn't just some elite colleges they were going to. They probably visited other technical schools looking for electronics and other technology people also. Thanks for your time. Later.
Johnny Logic. Sounds like a character.
Yeah. But I just thought that was a great story from Johnny, because we talked about in our spying episodes some of the recruiting tactics of the company, CIA, and other intelligence agencies. And it just, you know, you imagine it being this elite thing, right? They're looking for the best of the best. But that's a misconception, and that's a misthinking on my part, at least, personally. Because the CIA is going to need people who can just get equipment running and make sure equipment is operating and functioning properly.
But they have to be given the same clearances, and they have to be dependable and, you know, able to exist in this elite, you know, environment and not be worried that they're going to be, you know, the verification and all of that stuff, I'm sure, would be pretty intense. And it might keep some people from wanting to work for them because it sounds like a bit of a nightmare.
Maybe.
I don't know. But I mean, do you think the pay is higher?
I was going to say, yeah, it could be a great opportunity from a monetary standpoint, from an ethical standpoint. I guess it depends on how you feel about ye old company. I'm imagining that you may not even need the same clearances if and only if you are primarily setting up equipment, repairing equipment, doing some things where you're not actually interacting with the signals intelligence or whatever other thing is being gathered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, surely there are layers or levels, you know, of clearances, you know, it would be, at the very least be a bare minimum, you know, more so than if you just went to work for, say, you know, a corporation.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money here. And the reason why I wanted to play this one to think about that is because we got another message from another person that ties in almost perfectly with our message from Johnny Logic.
Hey y'all, I used to be in the Air Force, and I ended up getting stationed at the NSA, but we did SIGINT, of course. And I always think it's funny how when people picture a spy, they picture like James Bond or Jason Bourne, but then they don't think about those other little people, the guy who's talking through the little secure piece and feeding them information. And then also, so you got those little people, and then those people are getting information from other little people that are just, you know, going through emails, just the phone calls, all that stuff. I was one of those other little people, so third string, I guess you'd say. But, you know, I guess every little bit helps. Keep it up, y'all.
So, this anonymous person, we just call them Anon, they were working directly with the NSA as they describe a third string signals intelligence person.
Of little people.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with you, Anonymous. Maybe you felt third string, but I highly doubt that you were.
Even third string for the NSA is like first string for like any other gig, probably.
Yeah. And again, this is about misconceptions and wrong thinking personally on my part. Just, it's hard to imagine how many individuals doing that kind of work exist out there. For the NSA, for the FBI, for CIA, for whatever, Department of Homeland Security, any of those things. There's so many people that are running the equipment that is doing the monitoring. We know we've got, you know, is it in Utah where the giant data centers are for the NSA?
Sorry, I believe, yes.
And, you know, those are data centers, they're doing their thing. But you've also just got people, like our anonymous person says, reading emails, listening to phone calls, or at least monitoring phone calls, and just combing through data of, I'm assuming, individuals who are targeted by these alphabet agencies for surveillance, or maybe just, you know, all of us in a blanket style Probably not, right? That's what the data servers are there for. It's really cool that people listening to this potentially right now have worked or do work in the intelligence services in some capacity. Does that weird you out at all, Noel?
Weird me out? No, I don't know. I think we're probably it's only the third stringers that are listening to this show.
Well, we're the third stringers of people talking about these things, maybe? I don't know.
Man, don't zealous, sure. We're at the very least second string. It is interesting, and it's something that, you know, I think there's so much weight and kind of grandiosity and ascribed to those kinds of agencies. In a similar way to, like, you know, I mean, when you think about musicians, like big rock stars, for example, and you think they occupy this elite, rarefied air, and all of their, like, handlers are, like, the best of the best, and they're, like, you know, but, you know, when you start to work with certain higher-level talent, like we've had the opportunity to do here at iHeart, you sometimes realize that people get where they get just sometimes from being in the right place at the right time, and they're not always necessarily like the elite, you know, or at the very least, you know, what you might imagine. Everyone's just, they're all human beings that make up these teams, and I think all that applies to these types of agencies too. It makes me think of the idea that I think it was the NSA or the CIA weren't getting enough good computer programmers or good, like, you know, hackers, for a better term, people that could do, like, infiltrating, you know, running simulations to keep cybersecurity protocols up to date. They weren't getting enough good applicants because of their drug testing policies, because, you know, computer nerds like to smoke the devil's lettuce. So they laxed that a little bit, and then they started getting more applicants or more, like, you know, success, because, I mean, so many people don't need to work for an agency like that. If you've got those kind of skills, you can go out as a freelancer and make plenty of good money.
Yeah. And I wonder how much of it is a philosophical divide, you know, between the individual and how they view reality and security in the world versus how maybe the company views it. I'm glad you said devil's lettuce, Noel. We're going to jump to another message right now that deals with devil's lettuce. Okay.
This is Corn Dog. I was calling. You had spooky stories going on, and I had one that I've had when I was younger. I might have been partaking of the devil's lettuce with some friends of mine in a car, and I ended up seeing auras. I could see everyone's auras in the car, and when I mentioned that to everyone, the guy that was in the back seat said, "Oh, is that right? Tell me what you see now." And I swear, what I saw was him holding a human mask over his face, and he actually was a demon. So that was a little scary. It got me out of the car pretty quick. Anyway, that's always stuck with me, and I still can see it in my mind right now, that demon wearing a human mask.
So,
Zoinks. I think somebody might have sprinkled a little of the devil's PCP on your devil's lettuce, or the devil's something else. I don't know that I've ever. I smoked a bit of devil's lettuce myself in my day. I don't know that I've ever experienced any, like, demonic presentations like that. That does sound scary. It certainly put me off my my devil's lettuce.
Well, it's. I would say personally, as someone who has experienced the more psychedelic side of that substance, accidentally, perhaps, that's actually the reason why I don't like it. Personally, that's just me. It affects some people very differently. And the concept that substance, we're talking about cannabis, if it could have someone seeing auras, you know, right? The energy, essentially, potentially, that could be around some living thing or even non-living thing. And in this case, also allowing them to see through the veil to, you know, this individual's true self. I don't know, because that there's so many factors there. There's so many factors there. First, you'd have to have somebody in the car with you that is, in fact, a demon with a human face mask. And you'd also have to be affected by cannabis in a way that allows that. I don't know. It's a weird story.
Yeah, I was teasing at the top of the show, talking about it being laced or something like that. But no, it's absolutely true that cannabis, especially nowadays, you know, with the crazy strains that exist and like extracts and, you know, super, super, super potent versions, tinctures and the like, you can get a dose that will absolutely almost have similar effects to, say, LSD. And it made me think of a tweet that I saw referencing the Travis Scott incident. I'm going to read this to you. It was, yeah, from a Reddit group. Somebody reposted this tweet. It says, "I was in the pit tripping absolute nutsack watching Travis Scott and truly believe Travis Scott is a demon sent from hell. I can't describe the evil and darkness that possessed him. I firsthand witnessed his evil spirits passed to many of the fans at the concert. I luckily got out before the darkness consumed me. I highly suggest avoiding his concerts in the future."
Jeez, yikes.
I'm just saying, I only reference that to, you know, and obviously Travis Scott's getting some shit right now. And I want to harken back to the conversation we had around the Astro World situation. And Matt, you were very even handed in coming in and saying, well, sure, Travis Scott may have a pattern of this type of behavior. And, you know, there's a certain amount of responsibility that rests with him. But also there are protocols and systems in place. You know, and he should have been notified and told to stop the concert much earlier than actually happened. So I heard an NPR piece where, a music reporter was talking about not, you know, feeding into cancel culture and making it all about it's all Travis's fault. But I understand the concept of seeing through the veil and seeing someone's true colors when you're under a certain substance, influence of a certain substance, especially if things and situationally are veering in a direction that perhaps is showing someone's true colors. It can certainly manifest itself in that way. So there you go.
Yeah. Look, I'm waffling, just so you know, personally, about that whole Astro World situation and where, because, you know, I'm not somebody who can sit here and say who's to blame, but I watched some more videos of Travis Scott himself, how he's reacting to the emergency situation that's developing, and
not great.
But I definitely do stand behind this concept that somebody should have been on that stage alerting him, like, yes, in his ear, somehow, that things need to calm down or stop.
It's funny. I actually saw a video, not to get too far off the topic, but the last thing, because I don't know why I went down a rabbit hole of watching like old Green Day live performance videos, because Billy Joe Armstrong's a little bit of a diva and he kind of loses his temper sometimes and, like, you know, does a little temper tantrum. He actually did one at one of the iHeart award events or iHeart music festival events where they cut his set short to make more time for Usher, who was big at the time, and he lost his mind and smashed his guitar. It was just cursing up a storm. But I saw another event where he was playing in Germany, and they're playing, and all of a sudden, maybe it's in between songs. It is. It's in between songs, and all of a sudden, this German voice comes on over the PA system. And speaking in German, Billy Joe Armstrong is like, what the hell? He's like looking around, like, has no idea what's going on. And the German voice is saying, hey, everybody, I know you're all here to have a good time, but there was some moshing going on in the first few rows and someone was injured. So please stop doing that. Thank you. You know what I mean? And Billy Joe is not happy about that. That seems like a very cultural thing. I don't think they would ever do that in America. But I appreciate the bluntness and safety first attitude of that. You know what I mean? Like, who cares about these diva artists? It's about the safety. And I think a lot of times the reason they didn't tell him is because they're afraid of losing their job. They're afraid he would, like, freak out on them or something. I think it's a culture within his team, maybe, or within his crew. So I think even still, maybe the onus is somewhat on him. Maybe he has a non-approachable attitude in that way. And people are afraid of losing their job or getting ostracized. Because nobody wants to jump the gun or call something like that too soon. You know, and ask an artist to stop a concert if it wasn't nearly as bad as they thought. Nobody wants to be that person. But at the end of the day, that has to rest with somebody who isn't in the artist's entourage.
Yeah, I completely agree. When there are that number of people together, it's just way more dangerous than we imagine. I want to really quickly stay on this for a second. Sorry, Corndog, we're moving away a little bit from your message here. It's just, I watched a video of an Oasis concert from back in the day, and it was a high camera looking down at the crowd, and you can watch the human beings move as a liquid, essentially. And on randomly on Clubhouse, I was in a room, and there's a discussion about water and whether or not water has some, you know, water's relationship with consciousness.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting conversations. They're for me personally, they're very high level. It's not something that I necessarily believe, but it is fascinating to think about. And for some reason, that conversation linked up with this vision of humans as water molecules, essentially moving as a fluid. I don't know. There was a connection there that I wonder if anybody listening has any, you know, thoughts on that or insight into that, and just the makeup of the human body, the special relationship that life has with hydrogen and oxygen in that particular, you know, setup.
I just finished watching the Dune movie the other day. It took me a couple sittings. It's a little long. And I will say, I think that we are a little bit at a disadvantage for having all of these first run movies playing on demand. I do not think that is the way the artists intended, because it's so easy to get distracted or watch them in like multiple sittings, you know, or like look at your phone. I think you really do, to fully experience a piece of art like that, be kind of a captive audience, like in a theater where you are shamed if you look at your phone. But there is a part near the end of the movie. This isn't a spoiler. I'm just going to read the quote. This is from Frank Herbert's book. It just, you made said something that reminded me of that. This is the quote. A process cannot be understood by stopping it. Understanding must move with the flow of the process, must join it and flow with it. That's sort of the idea of the dynamics of, you know, consciousness as liquid, or like as, you know, being part of like the flow of information and consciousness. I thought it was really interesting. When I heard that in the movie, it really kind of perked my ears up.
Dude, oh man, I'm gonna get so trippy with some of that stuff, talking about the flow of time and how we experience each individual moment. But what we really experience is the perceived change between two stagnant
states.
Moments.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys, I haven't had enough devil's lettuce for this conversation. Let's take another quick break, hear a word from a sponsor, and then we'll come right back with some more messages from you.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think Abuelita knows best? Wilmer Valderrama here, executive producer of the podcast De My Abuelita First, and we definitely do. Join us while our host, Pico Ortiz, and our abuelita, Liliana Montenegro, play matchmaker for you loving hopefuls out there. Pico?
Yes, yes, Wilmer. We are ready for another wild ride. Listen every Thursday as abuelita Liliana and I meet three single cuties who will vie for a date with one lucky dater. Except, to get their heart, they have to win over abuelita first.
How PG is this?
Not at all. Totally are. Abuelita's here, so bring it.
Through speed dating rounds, hilarious games, and AI, abuelita's intuition, one contestant might be lucky enough to become the perfect match. Let's see if chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps.
Listen to De My Abuelita first as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with more. Oh man, I'm having such a good time. I'm just kind of rattling through these. They're all so good, and you're right. We don't get to nearly enough of these, so it's nice to. I don't know. I wonder if we should maybe do this again, or we do an all audio listener mail response episode. But we have one now coming from Chef Ben about an encounter at a restaurant.
Fellas, this is Chef Ben in Chicago. Got a ghost story for you. So I'm not much of a believer. I'm a little too pragmatic for all that kind of stuff. Kind of wish I was. But I was working at a place in Traverse City, Michigan, like 15 years ago, that we thought it was for the tourists. Everybody said that this place was haunted because it was a fine dining restaurant. It had been a B&B before, but it had been like a big old manor house before then, right? So after we closed up one day, I was waiting for my ride home, and I was standing in the bar area. The whole back of the bar was a big, giant mirror, right? And then all the way to the right side of the bar was the door that went back into the kitchen area. So I'm standing there, and to my left, reflected in the mirror, I see a woman walking through the dining room behind me. Gray dress, very light gray, almost white dress. I turned to my left and looked, because there wasn't supposed to be anybody in there. All the servers were back in the office doing their checkouts and such. I turn to my left and look, and the dining room is empty. I look back in the mirror, and she's continuing to walk through the dining room. I froze. At that moment, I froze, and all I could do was watch this woman walk behind me in the mirror to my right. So she passes behind me. She walks to the right. She gets in the mirror to the end of the bar on the right where the door is that passes through to the kitchen and steps into the door. So I'm seeing a reflection in the mirror of nobody behind me. And then she stepped, to my view, out of the mirror and into that doorway and then just walked back into the kitchen. I have never been able to explain this. And because we all made fun of the notion that it was haunted, because, again, we just played that up for the tourists, I never told anybody about that. But I'll be honest with you, you're going to have to beat me out here. It scared the f*** out of me. And I went right back in the kitchen and waited for my ride in the kitchen rather than continuing to wait in the bar. Thanks for your show. It is my daily commute companion, and keep it up. Thanks.
Matt, I have to say, it's descriptions like this from clearly intelligent, sharp, eloquent, and skeptical people that really make me question whether ghosts exist or not.
Fully agree.
In the positive direction. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, this is a guy describing something in such vivid detail who is clearly not a woo-woo type dude, and is coming at it like with his own internal skepticism, questioning himself. But that's some specific details right there. I mean, yeah, good Lord.
Yeah, it is. Well, and Chef Ben, I worked at a restaurant, big facility that had a bunch of different bars in it. And one of them was called the Main Bar. And it looks exactly the way you're describing this place where you're working, where on the right hand side, it's the way you get into the kitchen. If you're facing the bar, right behind the bar, it's just a giant mirror. And it was an old establishment, I think the 1800s when it was built. And I spent a lot of time, like, after hours in that bar area, you know, cleaning stuff up, making sure things are ready to go for the next service. And I just have to say, I get nervous when I listen to that message, because I can see that happening. Even though I've never experienced it, I can fully imagine it because of the way you described it. And as Noel said, you're describing it very calmly, even though it did scare the F out of you. Dude, I just want you to go back there and just hang out in that bar. And I want to go too, because I want to take all kinds of weird equipment and just record stuff.
Yeah, one of those Venkman thingies with the antennas on the side, you know?
Oh my gosh, Ben would go to town on all of that.
I don't know what else there is to say about that one, other than just hearing the story in your voice, Chef Ben. I think we're both very taken by this, and it definitely warrants further exploration. Go check it out again. Give us a follow up. We'd love to hear more.
This is what I want to hear from other people. Why would that apparition or whatever it was that Chef Ben saw, why would it only be visible in the mirror through a reflection? And not, you know, with his eyes as it's actually walking past? Because if you can see it in the mirror, there's light in some way being reflected off of that, you know, character, that ghost, that woman, whatever it was. There's light being reflected off of her that is visible in the mirror, but it is not visible to his eyes as she's walking past. I'm perplexed by that. Think about vampire legends or something where
this is reverse vampire rules.
It's exactly. It's, yeah. It's, and, oh man, I don't know enough about it, that explanation. I don't know.
I mean, to me, I've always ascribed some kind of mystical, you know, qualities to mirrors and prisms and like the visible light spectrum. And, you know, I mean, sure, there's science behind it, of course, that describes the phenomenon of what is happening when we see reflection. But like, you know, infinity mirrors, when you have mirrors reflecting against mirrors, I mean, to me, that's just like mind-bendingly cool psychedelic stuff. And to me, the idea, I just Googled ghost mirror or mirror ghosts rather, and a bunch of stuff comes up. The idea of haunted mirrors, of, you know, mirrors are often like a fixture in certain ghost stories or certain lore, the idea of a black mirror, you know, or Ben always talks about, you know, what do he's, you know, say my name in a mirror, you know, at midnight or whatever. I mean, all of this stuff, like there's a lot, the idea of a mirror as a portal is a thing as well. Ghost portal mirror is a thing on a ghost hunting wiki that I just found.
Oh yeah. I mean, mirrors are trippy. You can scry in them, put some black paint on them. It's all kinds of fun things you can do with mirrors. What I've been told is that you never want to put two mirrors facing each other directly like that. And of course, people said don't do that. So guess what I'm building right now. Anyway, it's fine.
What do you mean? Who said don't do that? It's super cool.
I hear that's the thing you're not really supposed to do. It's dangerous. I don't know. Write to us. What is that bad? Is that good?
No. Whatever. All I know is like a buddy of mine, a friend of the show, David Field, incredible artist, by the way. Check out his photography work. He built this thing he called a tesseract in this warehouse in New Jersey for this like project that he's working on. And it's literally a cube composed of mirrored panels that you then sit in the center of, and it's like reflections upon reflections upon reflections, where you literally, it's sort of like those Kusama infinity mirrors exhibits that they're the one that's like the travels and so popular with the pumpkins and stuff. It's a very small space, but when you do that, it creates the illusion of massive scale just going on into eternity, and to me that's magic.
Oh, totally. Well, and if it is, by the way, a really old building, like, what if that mirror really is the original, one of the original mirrors or something, right? That's been around for ages and ages. And somehow, through whatever system, magic, whatever it is, has the memory of that woman walking through that bar, either a bunch of times or one very important time. I don't know. It's a little out of my range of like being able to think about it, but I want to think about it. So again, write to us, tell us what you think about this stuff, or leave a voicemail. That's what we're going to tell you how to do that in just a minute. After we hear one more message, you ready for this?
Yes, sir.
Hey guys. I was just listening to one of your recent Listener Mail episodes, and you were talking about cartels. And it just made me think about kind of a unofficial, like, mini cartel that I don't know if you'd call it a cartel. I guess I'll let you guys decide, but I was kind of involved in. So, you guys know video games, online video games, there's esports, it's a very competitive market. And there's, you know, millions and millions of people playing these games to try to, you know, get up in the ranks. So what I was a part of was one of those third-party groups who would connect you, the casual player, to these pro players, whether they're officially sponsored pros or if they were still upper 90th percentile players who are still competing at that pro level, just not on a sponsored team. And what we would do is offer services to, you know, whether it's to level your character up, get you specific high-end gear for the game, you know, boost your ranks, basically carry you through the content for a price. And those prices were, you know, determined by our third-party group. And once we started getting a lot of money coming in, because, you know, time is money, people would rather pay a handful of cash to get that service done instead of spending, you know, 10 hours a day trying to grind it up themselves. So more and more groups started catching on, these third-party groups, and what would happen was the price would drive down. We were just competing against each other, tit for tat, driving the price down. They decided to come up with a little mini cartel where the majority, probably 75 to 80% of us third-party groups, would band together to just set these prices and not compete on the prices together, to maintain it as much as we can, keep it as high, keep our profits up, go from there. But I don't know if anyone has ever mentioned this, but it's just a little thing that's kind of behind the curtain in all these video games. This one specifically, for this one game, we were probably flowing around 55,000 USD per month. So it's a reasonable business out there that not many people talk about. So just wanted to toss that to you guys and kind of take it as you may. Thanks. Feel free to reach out if you need any questions about it. I'm more than willing to offer more details. Thanks. Bye.
Interesting.
Right?
Well, you know, this reminds me of, Matt, is like things like gold farming, you know, or like where people, you know, will sell gold, you know, in like World of Warcraft or whatever, like they'll amass it and then like sell it to others. Isn't that a thing?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's definitely a thing. I really wish I knew more about which game or even type of game this anonymous person is working on. And thank you, by the way, for sending us that message. It's fascinating stuff. I never thought about how widespread that practice is. Having some third-party company that will, I guess, gain access to your character in whatever video game you're playing and level that character up, amass, as you said, resources and other things, other items that you may need if you want to compete in the whatever PvP player versus player situation that game offers. And just the concept that several of these third party groups or companies would get together and say, oh, we're going to set the prices so we can all stay in business.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very logical thing to do. I don't know legal side of price fixing in the arena, but whatever.
That's my question, Matt. And that was my question, you know, in the Phoebus cartel situation. Like, a cartel is called a cartel for a reason. A monopoly is called a monopoly for a reason. But in my mind, I have a hard time differentiating between the two. And it almost seems like both are kind of considered bad, right? I mean, we think of cartel in terms of drug cartels, which inherently is bad. But a cartel in and of itself isn't bad, and that's legal, whereas a monopoly is not, right? It's not that simple, is it?
No, it's not that simple. A monopoly would be one group, one actual entity, right, that is the sole controlling factor that is able to fix prices and that kind of thing. But they're the monolithic one, right? A cartel is, at least in the way this one is being described, it's a group of different companies that each have their own income, right? Their own profits, and they operate individually, and they are coming together around a table and saying, okay, everybody, I'm going to charge X amount for, you know, 10 levels. You're going to charge that amount. You're going to charge that amount. We're all going to get the same, you know, potential business. Hopefully we can maintain the business that we already have and get more business, but not one of us is going to profit solely because that person is lowering their prices below all of the other ones.
So it's more like an oligopoly then. An oligopoly where there's like a handful of sellers that participate together for the greater good of all. And they, you know, sort of pool their resources and set prices so that they all can succeed.
Yeah.
And it's not easy to get into that kind of group. You have to really like be an established force. You can't just like ask to be a member. You kind of have to be asked to be a member.
Yeah, it is like being let into a private secret club if you are going to collectively make the decision to fix prices. Because again, I don't know the legality of it. Like it might be not the best thing to be talking about openly. But who knows? Write to us if you have any, you know, insight into that stuff. And I can't remember our past discussions about the ins and outs of the legality of carteling.
In the United States, price fixing is illegal. That practice is illegal. So an oligopoly involves price fixing, essentially. Agreeing to set a cap, you know, to have like an arrangement. You're supposed to let the market forces sort that stuff out, right? The free market economy. But if you have forces outside of the market that are manipulating the market, then that's illegal. Wouldn't you say?
Maybe. I don't know. I just don't know.
All right, Matt.
No, I'm not an attorney, okay? I don't know. I don't understand. All I know is that whoever that anonymous person is, whoever you are, we appreciate you telling us that story because that's fascinating. And now I just want to I need to put some money away to level up a character on some game. We just have to figure out which game it should be. If you're listening out there, which game should we be trying to play on a professional level? Because whatever that is, we'll just get our characters level up. I mean, I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, I'm good in terms of professional level. I am finally about maybe a little over the halfway point of Last of Us 2. I finally got good enough at it where it wasn't just bumming me out, getting my throat ripped out every 5 seconds, because the death scenes in that game are so brutal that it really makes you not want to keep playing it if you keep dying repeatedly, because they change every time. And it's like you go from getting your head smashed by a hammer to getting your guts torn out. And I finally have like gotten really good at the stealth aspects of it. And so I know it was a really divisive game because of some choices they made with the plot, but I think it's brilliant. I really have been enjoying it a lot. I mean, enjoying is a strong word for what is ultimately a very stressful experience, but that's what I'm playing right now. How about you, Matt?
I'm not really playing much, but Magic the Gathering Arena. I've been playing that a lot. As we're recording this, there's a new set of MTG coming out, and our good buddy, Wayne, the former security guard, now IT... I can't remember exactly what your position is, Wayne, but he reminded me through voicemail that there's a brand new set coming out having to do with vampires, and I believe a wedding. But yeah, MTG and Minecraft, buddy, that's all that's on my list. I need to get into something competitive, so let me know what I should be playing, please.
So hey, let us know, what are y'all playing? I am personally excited about this new Radiohead game that's coming out.
What?
It's like, you know, they got this reissue of Amnesiac and Kid A called Kid Amnesia. That's like a, you know, got a bunch of extra bonus stuff and outtakes and things, but they made this very trippy looking game for PS5 called the Kid Amnesia Exhibition. It's also on Mac and PC. It looks super trippy and interesting. Definitely interested in checking that one out, but yeah.
Oh, I will look at that for sure. I know I'm going to play Horizon, whatever the next one is.
There's a new one? I never finished Zero Dawn. I need to. That one was pretty tricky, too, with the stealth and stuff and all the weird mechanical animals that you had to kill with your bow and arrow. Great game.
It's a beautiful, beautiful,
beautiful
game.
Cool
story. Great, great main character. Loved it. All right. So thank you so much to Jackie, Matt, Johnny Logic, anonymous NSA signals intelligence person, whoever you are. Actually, I know who you are. We just kept it out of this episode. Corn Dog, Chef Ben, and anonymous video game leveler upper maker of lots of money, apparently. Industry that I want to get in. Hey, send a shout out. I want to know, like, could I do that in my spare time? Could I do that at night? Let me know. I'll take a job. Let's do it. So if you want to be like all of these awesome people, please let us know what you think. You can find us on social media, on Facebook and on Twitter. We are Conspiracy Stuff. Also on YouTube, Conspiracy Stuff. You can find us on Instagram, where we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. And if you want to do exactly what everybody else did on this episode, you can give us a call.
That's right. You can call us using the telephone at 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave a message at the sound of Ben's dulcet tone and let us know what to call you. Give yourself a nickname, a first name, anonymous, whatever. We will follow your lead. And then you, yes, you might end up on one of these listener mail episodes.
And please, when you do leave a message, let us know if we can use your name, whatever it is, and your message on the air. That's very, very helpful to us.
And if you don't want to do any of that stuff, not into the social media, not into using telephones, hey, that's fine. We've got another way you can get to us. You can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.